Hi, I'm Francis Hellier, and welcome to my podcast, Metaverse. Dedicated to the emerging world of the metaverse, this podcast aims to demystify and unpack the possibilities of the digital future just dawning over the horizon. In each episode, I talk to leaders in this growing space who are forging this new reality. From innovators in AR and VR, to futurists in crypto and space travel, and forecasters in business and tech. Together we'll ask the question, what's next? Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Mark Kovich, British singer, songwriter, and producer. Mark's first steps into the industry was with his debut album, Running Underwater, which reached over 40 million online streams. In 2019, he was invited by BBC Radio 1 to perform live at the Royal Albert Hall. After his single Drown was featured in EA Games' FIFA franchise, joining the top 50 viral Spotify charts and then receiving millions of streams. Dolly Parton gave Mark a shout out in a news article, and since then, Dolly's management company have taken Mark under their wing to help guide and develop his project. He now works alongside Dolly at CTK Enterprises and was invited to perform at the Dollyverse experience in South by Southwest. Mark's agency, Kovich Productions, also uses NFTs to unlock a link which evolves in real time and provides access to new projects and content, whilst also acting as a lifelong golden ticket, meaning the holder will always have free access to his shows. Mark, thank you so much for joining me. It's a pleasure to have you on the Metaverse.
I've got to say, Francis, what an introduction. It's it's a pleasure to be here, and I'm looking forward to getting my teeth sunk into it.
Just confirm it's all true. That's all I need to know.
It's all lies. No, it's really cool to hear things like that back now and again. You can kind of recollect and think, I've had some really lucky situations so far. And so much of it ties into how technology used to be and how it's developing moving forward. And I'm all here to see people like yourself, bringing some news and sharing some knowledge amongst a community. So it's cool to be here.
Thank you so much. Now, before you get too big-headed, let's take us back to the start. What made you want to get into the music industry in the first place?
I loved making music, as most people do who obviously become musicians. But I think I was also quite interested to see whether it was possible to actually have a career doing something that I loved. I was quite obsessed with the idea of how traditional industry systems functioned and whether or not it was possible for an independent artist to actually do it and actually make a living. So that was always a mixture. I've always had one foot in the pure creative enjoyment of it, another foot in the enterprise part of it.
Now tell us a bit about your recent work with Dolly Parton. What was it like performing at Dollyverse?
You know what? Amazing. It was an incredible experience. And people always ask me that question because everyone knows of her. She's such an iconic woman. She's such a legend to the point that the most common one is like, what's she really like? Is she a bit like of a diva or whatever? and it's really nice to report that having been lucky enough to spend a lot of time with her, she's just such a grounded and funny and an intelligent woman. And she is always the hardest worker in the room. So in terms of her success and the inspirations that she puts out there to the world, it's clear to see why. She just is a legendary human. And yeah, to have been able to get involved in that camp with all of the Web3 stuff going on and the performance stuff that we were doing, I'm very lucky, very, very lucky. And she is an incredible woman for sure.
I think as well, the thing about Dolly Parton is people don't give enough credit for her entrepreneurial spirit and how she's always out there innovating and trying new things. And I think she's probably one of the leading female entrepreneurs we have, really. So it's always good to know that people like that are nice as well as talented. So it's always good to hear. Tell me a bit more about Dollyverse itself and what should we expect? You know, how will it look in the future?
Well, one thing that's important to note is anyone within the team, whether it's CTK or myself and the people working within that project, just naturally, we have to be really careful about what we say, right? And that's partly because we don't know where the technology is going and partly because there aren't solid decisions in terms of what is going to happen. There's a lot of concerns in this space, as I'm sure we'll unpack. There's a lot of things that we might not have got right yet. So it's probably not my place to project or to prospect where that particular project is going. But I know that there's, I obviously cannot speak for Dolly in any way, shape or form, but one of the things that I think she's interested in is how she can utilize this tech to be beneficial to people. You know, if you look at her Imagination Library stuff and the philanthropy and the investments that she puts into communities, it's pretty impressive. And the more she gives, she's always stood by. The more she gives, the more that kind of comes back. And I think what's cool is it's quite likely that any project she does put out will probably be very focused around around people and how to help them in a new way. I think all of the steps forward that she makes seems to be revolved around that principle, and it's obviously served her incredibly well.
I mean, I suppose one of the big attractions for Dolly and others is the ability to connect in new ways with her fans. Can you describe a little bit about how that interaction actually works in Dollywoods?
The BCL project, the Blockchain Creative Labs project in South by Southwest, was a really good example of that. It was an example of saying, what happens when a creator, Dolly or anyone for that matter, you know, there are lots of panels and lots of artists, you know, streaming performances on the blockchain. And I think the way that looks and the way that connection with the artist, the fan looks is, you know, hello, I'm an artist, I'm going to create content, and I'm going to deliver it to you in a way that where we don't need a kind of a tertiary mediator. We don't need like a Netflix or an Amazon necessarily, or a Fox or whatever. And what happens is that relationship seems to be a little bit more direct to the source and less controlled by other parties. And I think that relationship, fan to artist, goes down a slightly different route then when you know, you're seeing it happen more and more now, but where someone has the ability, for example, with you in this podcast, you know, or where you go with it, you know, you're not necessarily going to have a small set of corporate options for mass release and mass streaming. You know, you're going to be able to have something like Dollyverse, like what happened at South By, where she was just streaming the performances live open on the blockchain, and it's reliable, and you kind of very difficult to just go and copy it and rip it and you know, put out on YouTube like it typically is in the past. So yeah, and then obviously she's able to keep a little bit more control, and the teams who are part of it can keep control on how they monetize their commissions out of that as well. And I think the open transparency of it is what is going to allow fans to get a much more real interaction and connection with the artist. So it was a cool thing to see very early on, you know, very pioneering, and to see that deployed as well as it was awesome.
Amazing stuff. Now, sticking with the blockchain, what first piqued your interest in the NFT space?
What piqued my interest the most was people saying, well, I can just screen grab it and then it's mine. That was what really piqued my interest. And I was like, huh, like this is an interesting debate. And that debate of people saying, look, NFTs are just like pictures of monkeys and you can screen grab it and you have it. They're worthless. They're pointless. And then I was trying to understand the other argument and trying to formulate an educated opinion on what was going on here. And I have to say, like, that piqued my interest. And then I fell down the rabbit hole. And I think once I understood the technology enough, because no one really fully understands this technology, you know what I mean? Anyone who comes out and says, I understand everything about NFTs, they're probably not quite there. But when I understood enough about the tech, I thought, wow, like this can really solve some problems. And the moment I realized it could solve some problems, I think the rest is self-explanatory. Once you start solving problems, you'll go in places.
I think that's right. You know, my background's in ticketing, and I think on the introduction we talked about NFTs, tickets, and that sort of thing. And I think it's a really interesting space. The idea of having collectibles as tickets. I mean, I remember I've got my Michael Jackson tickets from Cardiff World Tour, the Dangerous World Tour in Cardiff. You know, I saved them. But the idea of having them as digital tickets or something like that is and store them away, keep them forever, is really interesting.
And I think you can only imagine, yeah. Right? Like for you as a music fan, when you went to that concert and. You could only imagine if that was sat on the blockchain, publicly verifiably true that you were there and it wasn't some fake ticket that you'd bought or printed. Like, yeah, that's a great example.
Yeah, and also it solves many problems. Using the blockchain with ticketing solves many problems in relation to reselling and you know, having the producer control the price, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, really, really interesting. Now, aside from ticketing, what other opportunities do you think the NFTs can bring to the music industry?
I mean, there's loads, and I'd be careful to not go too far down the rabbit hole on this. But like, to answer the question in one dimension, I would look at something like music publishing, which I'm sure for a lot of people listening is one of the most, well, for some it's really interesting, others it's the most it's the most boring thing you can imagine. Then the reason why it gets boring and complicated is because you have millions of songs out there with thousands being released a second, and each song has got master copyrights, which are all split between artists or labels, and then you've got the publishing, the writing copyright, which is split between sometimes 10, 20 different people. And then at some point, someone's got to sit there in a traditional company with traditional spreadsheets, and they've got to go, okay, this song's this and is written by these people. Oh, how much did we earn? 0.003 pence for this stream in Germany. And now we've got to split that up and distribute. And before you know it, it's a car crash, like can of worms, that the wheels fall off. And it's almost impossible, with all best intentions and with the smartest people in the world, to try and financially distribute this forever complicating matrix of cash outputs. It's just a minefield, and you can see how the administration costs and the errors compound and become a nightmare. So when you look at something like a blockchain, where you have the ability to have essentially logic flows with the money, you know, if $1 comes in here, we can split it up, and it doesn't matter if it's fractional and if it's $0.00005 or whatever. And the fact that you can have every song with a specific, you know, blockchain wallet address, and every artist and every, you know, producer and every beat maker. And what you can do, like you can't do with traditional money, so to speak, is with this crypto blockchain evolution, we can build the logic flows. Now, I know some people will say, well, you can still do that with a spreadsheet. Yes, you can, but it's different, because on a blockchain, when all of the parties are playing by the same rules and they have the same observation of the same system, it's not like you're talking to a distributor who's got all of their accounts and all of their spreadsheets, and if you want to find out, you've got to audit them. No, the problem solved by this lovely, transparent sense of going, no, we're all playing this game. We can all see the movements. Let's all keep each other to task of making sure this is correct. And that is one example where transparency and security and trust can solve an internationally complicated problem. That's one example.
It's bad news for spreadsheet Steve, isn't it? He's going to lose his job.
Yeah. Well. I mean, I guess there are negatives to be considerate of, but you know, companies are always still going to need to reconcile and check accounts and bookkeeping. And you know, I just think that spreadsheet Steve probably. I know a couple of people who are spreadsheet Steve, and they say the same, that I just can't do it. They get overwhelmed. It's just too much to do. And sometimes there's some jobs you can't do unless you simply have the right tool. I feel like blockchain is the right tool for various issues, logistical issues, accounting issues, that are going to help everyone really in the long run.
I think spreadsheet Steve is a great name for a podcast, actually, isn't it? We should we should trademark that now. Can we go back to the golden tickets for a minute? Because I think it'd be useful to sort of describe how that works. And you know, the response you've sort of gotten from issuing them.
Yeah, my core principle whenever I talk about NFTs and with my agency TDS and aside, there's always a common question: how does it work? What can I do? And for me, how does it work? If you have one of my NFTs, you have a golden ticket for life. You can come to any show forever for free. Because the most important thing is the value proposition that actually makes sense. An NFT is worth zilch unless there is a good value proposition which is upheld by someone who actually genuinely means to give it. That's why probably 99% of NFT projects out there in the world, as I'm sure it isn't news to you, they're going to crash and burn, because the money grab opportunity has been too seductive. So when I decided to do mine, I didn't want to do some like algorithmically 10,000, you know, ducks with different beaks. You know, I wanted to
that's a shame.
I wanted to do a one-on-one. For each one of my songs, there's one, and it's a golden ticket. And if you have it, you have it, and that's it. There's never ever going to be more than one. And you got to understand, for me, the supply and demand thing is a big, much bigger consideration, because I'm not a Michael Jackson or a Bieber, or like that's just not how my career is. It's independent. It's me. It's my operation. So I need to understand that in this time of this technological adaption, in my smaller, relatively fan base, there's not tons of people who understand this technology yet, and a lot of them who don't even want to, because it's just not their bag. They're not interested in it. So for me, the way that I wanted to phrase mine was, I wanted to make them really, really rare, really unique, and I wanted to have a solid value proposition. And as a great example, going back to South by Southwest, I had some budget in my tour, you know, budgeting, and I just decided to fly people out who had a golden ticket. It was like, if you want to come to South by Southwest Austin, and I flew them out, and I made a bunch of videos and content about this on my socials.
Cool.
And I flew them in, and I took them all backstage. And this was obviously like where Dolly was headlining. People, you know, would have killed for these tickets, right? So to be able to be able to give people an experience like that, where it's even outside of my career, it's bringing them into these experiences that, you know, are pretty rare. And to do that gives me a massive buzz. Like I loved doing it, and I see the future of NFTs being a really interesting way where you can have an exchange of value that you couldn't typically do just with giving a ticket to someone, or, you know.
So tell us about Kovich, your digital agency.
Gotcha. So I guess the two companies I have, it's Kovich Productions, which is my company it's like my record label. But my agency is actually called Transparent Digital Services. It's a separate company, but they're kind of intertwined in a way. And Transparent Digital Services, TDS, it was born by mistake. I never set out to be an agency. I never really wanted to be an agency. But what I did find is there was a real lack of transparency and honesty with agencies, especially in music. And without, you know, like without going too negative on certain movers and shakers in the industry, what happens is when there's a lot of money floating around, people can very easily hide certain spends in certain budgets, right? So I made the agency because I wanted to have open accounting that anyone could look into, whether they're an artist or a business or whatever. What happens is I wanted to have an agency where they could go to and they knew that every penny that they were giving was actually being spent, and it would report openly. And believe it or not, in the agency industry, that's not always common. So the agency is a beautiful thing because it allows me to learn about new techniques and learn about new technologies, help other artists utilize and bring those to the forefront whilst I'm learning every day. Every day is a school day for me. So I'm keeping myself busy learning.
It's really cool. And how do you attract people to the business? I mean, is it difficult to find people that are sort of in this space, or have you found it quite easy to attract the level of talent that you need?
This is a great question because in a way, you're asking, you know, is it difficult to find customers in a way for the agency, for TDS? And we find it funny because we've never once marketed ourselves as an agency. We've just got lucky. It's a mixture of luck and just being transparent because we had our first little project come in, and then we did a good job, and then the word spread and the word spread and the word spread. And what I found most beautiful is purely because we were just honest and transparent, and it was so rare to have that with an agency. And I don't want to go into it, but there's certain ways that we built our company, which is completely different to most agencies, which just completely puts the power in the client's hands. We build everything in their environment, and it's theirs. So what we found was there was this chain reaction of everyone kind of figuring stuff out and talking about it. And before you knew it, we had people like John Legend, people like Dolly Parton, people like Gareth Emery, Sigma, like these big, big artists coming in going, can we have some of that? And despite not having marketed anything, we've just had a lovely group of people say lovely things about us. And no, at the moment, we're actually being very conscious to not take on too many projects because we need to give the focus to the clients that we have. And we've just been very fortunate. So it's a great question, though.
Well done, man. That's really cool.
Thank you. It feels good.
Yeah. So tell us a bit. So, I mean, earlier on, we touched on sort of predictions and you were sort of reluctant or reticent to sort of make any. But I wanted to ask your personal opinion on what your predictions are for the metaverse going forward. I mean, where are we going to be in 10 years time?
Where are we going to be in 10 years time? We're going to be in a great place with it. It's going to be adopted in many, many, many ways. And I feel pretty strongly about that because that comes whilst also admitting we're in for a really, really rocky road ahead. The truth is the technology isn't really there yet. I mean, the experience isn't amazing yet. You know, I am personally invested in many, you know, from the sandbox to Decentraland, and, you know, I'm constructing teams where we're building spaces and we're actively in there. And I think where we are is you're either prospecting for the 10-year period and you're happy to take the heavy losses and the mess that's about to come, because it's just the user experience isn't there yet. And we need it on mobile devices, and we need internet that's quick enough, and we need to have processing on the blockchain that can keep up. Have you played DCL or have you been on Sandbox?
No,
Sandbox is much better, but you know what it's like in DCL.
It's a bit like CFAX or Teletext in the internet age at the moment, isn't it? That's what it feels like.
So. Yeah, and I feel like if I was to kind of paint what's happened in the last year, it went mega, mega hype, mega, mega value. And then it brought loads of eyeballs and people and users came in and they went, ah, nah, this is not so great. And the deflation's happening now. Now, does that mean that the metaverse is going to die? No, it just means that we're way, way too early and we're not bringing enough value, going back to the value proposition, to these users. Will that change? Yes. You know, there's a lot of IP coming in. There's so in the undercurrent, as you know, I mean, with this podcast, I'm sure you're aware, there's so many big movers and shakers who are now in development mode, and they're not thinking about rushing this stuff out. They're thinking about what's happening in 2, 3, 4, 5 years time. If we're talking, if the question is, where do I predict we're going to be in 10 years? We would have probably got off of the rubble tracks and off of the, you know, the mountains and the chaotic journey. And we'll probably be on relatively solid ground, and we'll probably have the technology, the network infrastructure to make the experiences that are valuable possible.
I think that makes sense. Now, looking at the metaverse, one of the things that we keep touching on this podcast is how it's a very creative concept. And lots of the technologies that we're describing and talking about, and we've had some wonderful guests on, it almost invariably becomes a conversation about creativity and artistry and everything else. So because you're particularly in this space, can you imagine almost new genres or things that will be created in the metaverse? I mean, are we looking at things that get merged, be that theater and TV, or, you know, how do you imagine that's going to pan out?
I mean, I'd say you've hit the nail on the head. And I think that where you've had these conversations so much already, it's pretty clear to see how people's gut feeling is about it. But this almost comes back to what I said about publishing. If you think about the master and copyright splits and the trickery and how complicated it is, it's natural to see artists who try and build their own system and their own thing, and they're looking out for themselves. And that obviously makes sense because they want to monetize, they want to have a career. When you're talking about how does the metaverse change that, well, maybe if publishing and collections of royalties were more open and transparent, the cultivation soil for collaboration is much more nutrient rich, which is a ridiculous way of saying it. But what I mean is more
stuff. I like it. I like that. Yeah. I like it though.
More stuff can grow on the basis that there's more trust and transparency. So I think that, you know, there's certain projects, maybe you want to look at, everyone looks at Bored Ape as the go-to for examples, but you see now, whether it's Bored Ape level right up there or whether it's, you know, new emerging projects, I think you're going to see a lot of projects similar to what we saw with the gorillas. You remember? You know what I mean by that? It's like, yeah, you're going to see a lot of avatar-based artistry and, you know, digital renders of performers who don't age, don't get tired, don't need to travel across the world. You know, these are going to be cartoons and digital renders, and it's going to be musically and creatively based full of a much bigger pool, and potentially even an always changing and augmenting pool of input, but can still be monetized correctly and distributed correctly under the same umbrella. And, you know, it's funny going through that thought process because I hadn't quite thought of it like that. The question you posed was really good. So I would agree with you that the collaboration will be much more fluid, and we will have the reconcilability to make that safe for people to put their time into and get compensated for it.
Great stuff. Now, what's next for you, Mark?
What is next for me? I mean, we're actually out here in Holland working on the TDS side of things, and we're just looking to get our heads around how we are going to look at helping people develop their Web3 IP as well as part of that, and tightening the bolts on all sorts of online campaigning that we do. For me, I'm also working on a third album. I have a tour coming up in September through the EU and some UK dates inbound, jumping over to the States for more stuff with CTK and development work with Dolly. So it's a fun time to be in this space, and it's a fun time to have things ahead.
Amazing stuff. It's been a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much, Mark.
Anytime. Thank you very much for having me, mate.
You've been listening to Metaverse with me, Francis Hellier. Thank you to my guest, Mark Kovic, for a great conversation. Tweet us at Metaverse Pod with any suggestions or feedback. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please do share a link on social media. You can sign up to receive an email when the new episode drops at our website, metaverse.fm.